Welcome to The Final Word, a Bible teaching ministry with pastor, teacher, and author Jim Andrews. The Final Word is grounded on the invincible conviction that what the Bible teaches, God teaches. And that is the last word. On this program, truth still matters. The Bible is in, Babel is out. The Final Word is funded by listeners like you. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about the program, please go to our website at thefinalwordradio.com. There you'll find archives so you can listen to any program you may have missed. Visit us on our social media platforms at The Final Word Radio and write us a note. We love hearing from our listeners. We'll provide other contact information at the end of the program, so have your pen ready. And now Jim Andrews continues his current study of God's Word.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us again on The Final Word. Before we begin today's exposition, if you will go to jimandrewsbooks.com, you will discover there some articles that I produced over the years that you may find interesting and helpful. I'm just happy to share them with you for whatever benefit they may have. Now, we continue our exposition of Paul's epistle to the Ephesians. We're in chapter 6. We'll soon be drawing this study to a close. The first three chapters of the book of Ephesians have to do with the wealth of the believer. Chapters 4 through 6-9 have to do with the walk of the believer. And chapter 6-10 to the end, basically, has to do with the warfare of the believer, such as the outline of Paxton on Ephesians. Since we have been saved by grace through faith, and we have the wealth of such a hope as we enjoy in Christ Jesus, it is our moral obligation to walk in a manner that is pleasing to God. Paul is describing what that walk looks like. And from chapter 4, verses 17 on, we have what I call a code of conduct. And more recently in this section, chapter 4 through 6-9, he has been describing how as believers, in order to honor Christ, to glorify God, we ought to relate in various relationships. He talked about husbands and wives, and now in chapter 6, he's talking about how children ought to relate to their parents and parents to their children, and then he'll be talking about the relationship of slaves to masters and masters to slaves, and there we'll have to do a little contemporary translation so that we do not twist the principles. Let's go back and review chapter 6, 1 through 3 and 4, and then pick up from there. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Then he quotes from the law. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, and here's the promise attached to it, that it may be well with you and that you may live long upon the earth. Now, fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and the instruction of the Lord. In the Lord qualifies that obedience. It expresses its spirit. We obey our parents out of devotion to the Lord's will. This is what the Lord wants of children toward parents, and Christian children are obliged in thanksgiving to God and out of a spirit of faith to do as the Lord commands. The Lord surrounds it with a condition. Obey your parents in the Lord. It disallows any compliance with parental commands that deviates from the will of the Lord. The law of God is always greater than the law between a child and a parent. This is a child's moral duty, for this is right. And we said that's all in the world we need to know. It's not all that we're given to know, but that's all we need to know. Honor your father and mother, children. This precept is morally timeless, but it can be situationally relative. For there are godless parents who might ask of their children terrible things, to lie, cheat, and steal, and even prostitute, as so often happens in some parts of the world, and here in America also. Those things are out of bounds, and children are not asked to comply with that. They're to obey their parents in the Lord. And insofar as the parents are requiring things of their children that are compatible with the law of God, then children ought to do that without question. There's a general promise attached, as Paul says, that it may be well with you and that you may live long on the earth. It does not mean that an obedient child, a child who honors his father and his mother or her father and mother, is guaranteed a long life. It is a generality. The fact is, when children heed their parents, it tends to promote their general welfare, and it gives them a better chance to live long rather than get their lives cut short by some childish folly. Now, the duty of parents to children, that's what we were last looking at. Paul begins with a common parental blunder in his day and in our day. Do not provoke your children to wrath, fathers. In other words, don't exasperate your children. There are several ways that you can exasperate them and actually hinder your children spiritually and otherwise. You can exasperate them with unreasonable expectations. You can exasperate them with capricious demands. And you can exasperate your children with inconsistent discipline. One day you're all over roulette with all your might, and the next day you just wave it on past. That confuses kids. And this is a common culprit in provoking your children to wrath. Excessive discipline. So what we've got to learn as parents is measured reactions. And what we've got to be careful to do, and this is Paul's arch instruction to parents in raising their children, is bring them up in the discipline and the instruction of the Lord. He didn't say bringing them up hugging trees on Sunday. He didn't say bring them up playing soccer on Sunday, when you ought to have those kids in an environment where they're receiving, not only from you, but from the church, the discipline and the instruction of the Lord. You need to rear them in an atmosphere of godly instruction, exhortation, and admonition. You know, when my parents were rearing me, that is one area in which they did not fail. My parents weren't perfect any more than your parents were perfect, but I want to tell you, I've said this so many times, it's kind of hard for people sometimes to believe. Listen, I had my conflicts with my parents, to be sure. My parents were often wrong in their heads, but I tell you personally, I never saw them wrong in their hearts. They were trying to do the right thing. I never saw anything that struck me as a lack of integrity and a discrediting of their witness for Christ. I wish my children could say that. They probably can't. But certainly I could say that about my parents. My dad was an athlete himself, and a very fine one. But once he became a Christian, which was sometime after I was born, my dad's life was really changed. He wasn't one of these parents who was trying to live his life through his kids, nor was my mother. My dad was not at all my ball games. I have an unsaved younger brother. The brother right next to me resents the fact he took what he thought was my grievance upon himself. My dad didn't always show up at my football games. I understood that better than my brother. I understood what my dad's values were, and he was afraid I would become one of these pampered, spoiled, self-centered, prideful athletes. He didn't want to encourage that too much, so he wouldn't let himself get all excited about my athletic achievements, though they were not, you understand, notorious. I did get a football scholarship, but my dad was into me performing in school and doing what kids are in school for, more than lettering and getting trophies and write-ups in the paper and all that kind of thing. I think my dad could have used his head better in that, but I understood better than my younger brother next to me understood. What my dad did do from the time I was a little guy was sit me beside him and read to me Bible stories. And then some of you who are old enough, might be a few out there, who could remember a set of books called The Sugar Creek Gang. He'd read me Bible stories, and then I couldn't wait for another chapter from the next book in the series of The Sugar Creek Gang. I'm telling you, those had a major impact on me. My dad counseled me. I didn't always want to hear his counsel as I got older, as he picked up that Bible and he says, "Now, bud, I want you to hear something." But he brought me up, and I could go on and on. But he and Mom brought us up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. In doing so, as I said, Dad was not always the wisest. Dad had a tendency to get me down and lecture to me rather than just simply talk to me and reason with me. And I resisted some of that, but the Spirit of God used everything that Dad did, and it made an imprint on me, though I was pretty sure not to let him know what an impact it was having on me when he would do those things. But it was godly instruction, godly exhortation. There should be measured reaction as we bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. The punishment should fit the crime. Usually that was the case in my parents' rearing of me. But once in a while, Dad would get so exasperated that he'd lay it on a little heavier than probably he should have. And once in a while, not very often, but once in a while, I did the same thing myself in raising my girls. Sometimes Dad had the tendency to strike first and then ask the appropriate questions later. And I replicated that. Had to ask my girls forgiveness a few times in rearing them. In bringing them up in the nurture and the discipline and the instruction, the nurture of the Lord, there must be appropriate correction. Now, here are some remaining questions. How long is a child to obey our parents? We're grown now. You may be out of the home and on your own. You may be in your 40s. You may be in your 50s. You may be getting up there where now your parents are getting a lot older, may not be as independent as they once were. How long are we to obey our parents? Well, let me tell you, you obey your parents as long as you're under their roof. Young man, if you're 25 years old or young lady and you've gone back to live with your parents, I know, you're independent now. You're fully an adult. But you know what? If you're not independent enough and if you are not sufficient by yourself to live under your own roof, you must, while you're in their home, go by their rules. You should obey your parents as long as you're dependent upon their means. You're going to college, my gosh. I'm 20 years old. I'm going to college and I'm going on their money. If you're going on their money, you're dependent upon their means, then obey your parents. If you don't want to do that, then be independent and go out on your own. Again, how long are we to obey our parents? Thirdly, as long as their will for us does not conflict with God's will. And of course, we're still talking about when we're dependent on our parents and we're under their roof. You shouldn't do just anything your parents say, no matter what age. If a parent, an unbelieving parent, or even a believing parent, ask you to support them or help them in some action or enterprise that is contrary to the will of God. Now, here's another question. What all does honoring our parents cover? Children, we're to honor our parents, okay? How long? Well, we should give them obedience as long as obedience is due. How long is it due? I'll go back. As long as we're under their roof. As long as we're dependent upon their means. That's how long. So one thing honoring our parents covers is being obedient to them as long as due. But it also means, even if they're in their 70s and you're in your 50s, it means always treating them with respect as parents. It means returning the same loving care they once gave us. I'll give you a great example of that, of my youngest brother, Alan. I thought it was very affecting and poignant. My dad was strong as a horse until he was about 86. He was always helping the old folks, climbing around on roofs and fixing the roofs of people who needed it, older folks. He'd go mow their grass and do all that kind of thing. My dad was strong. He seemed indestructible, and even though he was that age, you just couldn't imagine him dying. Well, one day he was mowing his own grass, and all of a sudden he passed out and his head hit the pavement. Somebody found him, and Dad came to, and he was taken to the hospital, and they really never could identify anything wrong, but from that day on, Dad had vertigo. When he would go outside, it was worse. As I say, nobody was ever really able to diagnose what the problem was, but it put the quietus on Dad's ability to be physical as he once was. And there he started going downhill. Intellectually, he was sharp and he was on top of it. But then as he neared his 88th birthday, things started to go wrong. Dad was in and out of the hospital there. And I remember as things started to get worse, as so often with older people, Dad couldn't control his private functions. He was always a caregiver, couldn't stand for anybody to have to care for him. So happened Alan was there at that time. And Dad would mess up I think by this time he was having to use Depends or something, and he would try to hide that stuff. He just do the best he could on his own, but he was not really capable, and Alan would find him trying to hide that stuff. He said, Dad would cry when Alan said, Dad, 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 don't do that. I'll take care of that. And Dad said, Alan, I don't want you to have to do that. Alan said, Dad, when we children were babies, did you ever help change our diapers? Dad said, well, yeah. And Alan said, well, now that you're in this condition, is there anything wrong with me helping you? That's the idea. Honor your parents. Return, always, no matter how old you are, the same loving care they once gave us. Don't be a baby boomer with all the selfishness that so often goes with it. And as soon as your parents betray one fissure in their strength, go looking for the nearest nursing home you can pitch them into and say, here, take care of them. We've got plenty of money. You just take care of them, and we'll go on with our lives. Now, folks, there is a time. Please understand me. I know that. There is a time when you've done all you can do and your strength is exhausted and you simply, in your circumstances, cannot find a way to care for your parents as you once did, and you have to put them in a care facility. We understand that. But far too many people just dump their parents there, and that's not what the scripture means. So, children, honor your father and mother. That's dishonoring them. Well, here's a remaining question before we move on in this text. How does one honor a disreputable parent? I know that some of you, it's everywhere, have parents who are nothing to brag about, to say the least. So, you're a believer now. How do you honor a parent or parents that really were not of the best kind? They were not respectable parents. Here's my advice in the application of that principle. Treat them with the respect due every human being. We're all created in the image of God. That image is greatly marred, but your parents are human beings. Treat all human beings, most especially your parents, even though they weren't the most respectable kind of parents, treat them with respect. Love them, care for them, be benevolent to them, not for what they are, but in spite of what they are. You owe your existence to them. Secondarily, you owe it to God. But they brought you into this world. And if you love your life and if you love being here, well, remember, they got you here, and in one way or another, they cared for you, and here you are. So don't love them, we don't say, for what they are, because what they are is not respectable, but love them as parents in spite of what they are. Thirdly, to forgive them is not to excuse them. Nobody's asking you to excuse them, but it is to refuse to spend the rest of your life punishing them for what they were or what they were not. Now, we come to slaves. Be obedient to those who are your masters according to the flesh, with fear and trembling, in sincerity of your heart. Be obedient as to Christ. Don't be obedient by way of eye service. Don't be obedient as men pleasers, but as slaves of Christ, doing the will of God, that is, obeying your masters from the heart. With all good will, render service as to the Lord. Don't do it rendering this service as to men, knowing as you render service with all good will that whatever good thing each one does, this he will receive back from the Lord. That is, whether you're a slave or a free man, it doesn't matter. And masters, do the same things to them, your slaves, and give up threatening, knowing that both their master and yours is in heaven, and there is no partiality with him. We got to translate here the time-bound into the timeless. Here's the challenge before us, slaves and masters. We've got to extract the timeless principles embedded in the cultural form, which are time-bound. The cultural forms are slaves and masters. So the question is, in our contemporary culture, what relationships most nearly correspond to the slave-master relationship? Well, I can think of two. They're not exact, and there's where things get a little dicey when it comes to application. There's the employee-employer relationship, but I emphasize they're not an exact analogy. And then there's the soldier-officer relationship in the military. Now, there are limits of application of this principle. This slaves obey your masters, it's limited strictly to the ways in which the ancient and modern forms are alike, not unalike. So let's talk about what's timeless in this text. In supervisory relationships, contemporary ones, you and I are at the beck and call of other people. Most of us have employment. Somebody's in charge of us. In my case, for example, an elder board. And if you're in the military, somebody's in charge, and that will be your officers. In those relationships, contemporary relationships I just mentioned, others command us. They command our use of time. They command our use of energies, and they command our wills. As far as that relationship extends and exists, the same obligations apply as in this text. Your boss has a certain authority over your time, over your energy, and over your will. For example, those under authority are obliged in the Lord to respond to those in authority, but get this, up to and only up to the boundaries of that authority. When you go to work, you have a boss, and your boss has a right to tell you within certain limits what to do with your time. Even on the job, the law may circumscribe what your employer can require you to do, but insofar as you have a job, you have a boss, and your modern boss has, within certain prescribed limits, has the right to tell you how to use your time, how to use your energies, to command you to do his or her will and not your own. So to that extent, you're under authority for, what is it, 8 hours a day? Some longer. Now, there's a danger here of faulty equations. You just say, well, slave master, that's employee-employer. Let's take a management union conflict. These things can be pretty lawless. They can be pretty mean. I was born in the state of West Virginia. I can remember the days, mid-20th century, when you crossed a United Mine Worker picket line. Your chances of getting away with that without being maimed or killed were not really too high. If a United Mine Worker happened to be a believer, and he thought if the company, the mine owners, called him to cross the picket lines in a legal strike, if they took this principle and applied it and said, I've got to obey my master, which is the mine owner, they'd take their life in their hands. I'm not excusing those who might have taken their life or who might have maimed them or burned their house or whatever. No way am I excusing them, but I'm saying the mine owner does not have the right to command that employee's time, to command his will in that situation. You may have a father of eight who goes out and he gets himself killed crossing a picket line thinking he was doing what God commanded him to do when God commanded him to do no such thing. Got to be careful here in the application of this. You could be, as a pastor, could be asking somebody to risk unnecessary loss of relationships and even Christian witness in applying apple standards to orange situations. You could cross that picket line and never be able to witness again to another laborer in the United Mine Workers Union or some other union. So let's not make what I called apple standards and apply them to orange situations. What we are to do, insofar as others have the right to command us, is to do it God's way. And we're to live in employment situation by God's law, and that's always safer and smarter. No society will long thrive or survive that lives contrary to God's moral laws. Well, friends, I'll have to come back to that. My meter is running here. We'll pick up with this admonition in our next study. God bless you and have a wonderful day.
The Final Word is a listener-supported ministry. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about this program, please visit our website at thefinalwordradio.com. Our postal address is The Final Word, 4565 Carmen Drive, Lake Oswego, Oregon, 97035. Our email address is info@thefinalwordradio.com. Our phone number is 503-699-9840. If this program has ministered to you, tell a friend about it. We do solicit your prayers for God's hand upon this outreach.